Award-winning journalists. New York Times bestsellers. No topic out of bounds. No opinions left unsaid. An institution for sports talk and information. This is The Sports Reporters. Here's Mike Lupica, Mitch Albom, and Bob Ryan.
I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press.
I am Mike Lupica of MSNBC and MLB.com, and welcome to the Monday morning edition of the Sports Reporters broadcast. We now come to you on Mondays and Thursdays with the continuation of our long-running hit show on ESPN. You can find us on Stitcher. They have been really good about this, and anywhere else we get your podcast. You guys, I know you both have a lot going on in your life. I don't know if you were aware that around 6 o'clock last night, they announced the members of the this year's class of the NCAA basketball tournament. And I, with the ones and the twos and the threes and how Kansas fell and Michigan State, I'll start with you, Ryan. I didn't feel any sense of outrage about anything that I saw with the top teams yesterday.
I did not. I think that, I'm of the consensus view that there were about six teams that were in contention for that number one spot, and there was going to be some mild outrage, at least as somebody gets in the second line. But I didn't have a problem with it. It was going to be close. I think maybe some people, I'll throw it out there, not me, but maybe some people who are predisposed to be skeptical about Gonzaga overall.
Put me down is one of them, by the way.
Okay, well, would say that they're the least worthy of the four, but I think, well, I'm not one of those people.
Well, you guys clearly don't live in the Midwest, where this stuff is taken more personally, and there's a good deal of outrage here, particularly where I live in Michigan, for both of the teams, actually, in a weird way, because now, they played each other, Michigan and Michigan State played each other in the finale of the Big Ten tournament at a time when they had to be concocting all of the final brackets. And while they say they took Michigan State's win into account by them jumping over Kentucky, the fact is, and I wouldn't call it outrage, Mike, but I think it's they got screwed. Michigan State arguably could be a number one pick. If you look at all the things, I'm not going to go into those, all the minute details of quality wins and number one, but they lead the way, all right? They're on the top of the pile in terms of opponents that they face. They face tough teams outside of their conference as well as within the Big Ten, which got the most bids here. So obviously that's a good conference. And yet everybody knows that Duke is the number one team in the country when Zion Williamson is healthy, and they put them in the same bracket as them. And meanwhile, Michigan, who Michigan State beat three times, including yesterday, gets to go as the number two seed in the side where Gonzaga, which you just said is arguably the weakest of the four, is the number one team that they would have to beat to get to the Final Four. So Michigan State having to play Duke in the Elite Eight, if it all plays itself out, just to get to the tournament, seems wrong to me. Outrage, I'm not pulling my hair out over
it. Mitch, you watched them more than I did. I watched them yesterday, okay? And have you watched them this year and thought to yourself, man, I am absolutely looking at one of the best four teams in Kentucky in the country? Because I
haven't. Michigan State?
Yes.
Yeah, if not the top four, the top six. They can beat anybody. They're very, very good defensively, very strong rebounding, and they have this, amazing player in Cassius Winston who can do anything. So, and that's what you look for in an NCAA team, isn't it? You don't want a team that has to rely on 3-point shooting, because usually somewhere along the way in six games that goes south on you, especially when you start playing tough defenses. You want a team that can rebound, and you want one star player. They have that. Now, does that mean they're going to even get to the Final Four? No, I don't think they're going to beat Duke. But I don't think they should have to go through Duke to play it. I think that they're better qualified personally. I'm probably biased where I live than Gonzaga. And here's the other question is, do the top seeds from the ACC all belong where they are? I mean, is it that good a conference? Sometimes it's hard to tell when teams are playing one another. The SEC does that in football for us. It slants the way you look at it because they all seem like such great teams. But then sometimes they go out and play a team from a different conference, a different style, and they don't necessarily do as well.
I don't think Michigan State, I don't know what Bobby thinks, I don't think Michigan State is better than any of the three ACC teams. And you know that I'm, Bob, you know that I am a Virginia denier, that mm-hmm. I don't love the way they play. I always think they underachieve at this time of year. But I, you know, and again, Michigan State got the tougher draw because they do have to play Duke if they make it that far in the Elite Eight. But when I look at Michigan State and I look at some of these other number twos, Bob, I always see Kentucky getting better as the year goes along, and I don't think any of those teams are better than Kentucky.
I do not either, because I have Kentucky going to the championship game. So, and my very hastily filled out bracket, but I had to do it, so I did it on instinct and impulse. And but I absolutely.
What convinces
I don't
you that Kentucky's
so.
Better than Michigan State? I'm curious.
No, convinced. Oh no, I'm not
talented,
convinced.
Mitch, I do, and I think he coaches them up as the season goes along. They always look like they're scratching around early. I always think to me. Their talent level might not be Duke, and it's borderline with Carolina, but I don't think anybody else has better players in the country than Cal has. I don't.
No, I think one team that has a lot of players that is going to be dangerous, and even though they lost a game I didn't think they were going to lose, and that's Tennessee. I'm still high on Tennessee. They've got some real talent.
And guess what about Gonzaga? I'll go back to Gonzaga for a second. Not only do I think they're a weak number one, If they win their first round game and Syracuse beats Baylor, I'm not even sure that Gonzaga is going to get to the second weekend.
Yeah, I think they're, well, I'm looking here. I think they got a bracket that they can handle, and I got them going a long way. They're very good when they're.
Do you not think Syracuse in that zone will present great problems for them in the second round if we get that game?
They could very well. Yes, they could very well. But I just don't think so.
Don't sleep on Michigan either. I mean, John Beilein has been an amazing addition to that program.
He's my favorite coach, Mitch. My favorite coach for a long time.
They can't beat Michigan State this year, for each game had its own kind of story, injuries and things like that. But they've done pretty well over the last 5-6 years in the NCAA tournament, including, you know, the final game last year and the final game in 2013. And, you know, if they're who Gonzaga has to beat to get into the Final Four, that's an unknown right now. And now Michigan has a reputation of being a team that has to hit its threes and big shots in order to have a game. They're not going to just win on defense, but they are different than that team last year. That was its reputation last year, a little bit of this year. But you take out those three losses to Michigan State this year, and they have a damn good team that plays better as they go along. Mike, you said that the same thing about Calipari. You know, there's certain coaches, clearly Krzyzewski, that they know how to coach the tournament. And Beilein knows how to coach the tournament. I think that they could be a tough out given the bracket that they're in.
I never bet against John Beilein. From West Virginia on, even before that, I love the way his teams play basketball. I'm an unabashed John Beilein fanboy. But I'll tell you something, Mitch. Nevada's really good. That will be if it's Nevada and Michigan in the second round, that's going to be a challenging game for Beilein in Michigan. I do.
Oh, not only do I think it's challenging, I'm picking Nevada, and just as I said, I did this on a whim.
Now you're going to upset Mitch.
Upset me.
They had a strangely whopping loss, but I did see them a few times, and those Martin
Michigan
twins and.
Mitch
Thurman,
has Fonte. Michigan in play again, Bob. He's Mitch, no, it's not baseball. It's not football. It's not play. Basketball.
They're,
Mitch
Albom
has teams that have ambitions now, that have possibilities. So
in the state of Michigan, we're just happy to have any team that isn't already tanking. I mean, they are saving our spring here. You know, we've had, although the Pistons, I got to give them a little credit. They've turned it around a little bit. But
Does anyone have any love
and baseball?
I'm just throwing it out there because there's so many ways we could do it. You know, we could talk about 68 teams, theoretically. Anybody got any love for the defending champions as to how far they might be able to go?
You know what? He's done
year.
I'll tell you something. I watched, Bob, I don't know how much you watched the Big East final. It was a terrific basketball game.
I did watch the Big East final.
Seton Hall was a terrific story, and it was a really good game. And all I kept thinking was, this wasn't supposed to be a year for Jay Wright. This was supposed to be one of those building block years, and he has done as good a coaching job as he's ever done with these kids. And do I think they have a puncher's chance? I don't know. I got to look closer at their draw.
I got them getting out of the first. Going to the regional. They play St. Mary's, and I got them winning that, and then I got them playing Old Dominion, beating over Purdue, and that's a 14-3. I understand that, but even if they do play Purdue, I like them to get to the regional. And then they would play.
And by the way, Bobby, restate what you said on Twitter, which is so true, that once you past 1 versus 16 and 2 versus 15.
Here's my position, and I do not deviate. When it comes to discussion of upsets, before we even get started in this tournament, let's make one thing perfectly clear. All quote-unquote upsets cease at 3:14. And when you get to 4:13, do not bother me talking about an upset, because the tournament doesn't work that way. And the balance of power is spread out enough in that middle rank range that 4:13 is not a huge upset. That's my position. So I don't want to hear about upsets after 3:14.
Okay, now you've stated a little pet peeve. Let me get two out here as well, having to do with the tournament. Number one, don't have conference tournaments ending on Sunday. Because it, first of all, puts ridiculous pressure.
How about not have conference tournaments? What do they change except they diminish their own regular season?
Maybe? Nothing. They don't change anything. I see no reason. It's like having a bowl before a bowl, in college football. It's dumb. And for the longest time, the Big Ten sort of held out of that tradition. And then it decided, well, there's money to be made, so let's get in on that. One around here, and it doesn't change anything.
No more to be said. You just said it. That's why they have them. We all grew up in a time when there were two conference tournaments in our formative childhood years, the ACC and the Southern. Nobody else played conference tournaments in the 50s and 60s. And these are all a product of television and money. And that's that. And finally, the last holdout was 2 years ago. The Ivy League succumbed, and they went to a four-team tournament, and which has now been played 2 years in a row at Yale, and Yale wins a game at home in the tournament. Well, that happens all the time. No problem. Anyway, they were the last holdout. When the Ivies went, that was it. The end of any kind.
Okay, but
if
you're going to have them. If you're going to have them end on Saturday, so there's not a discarding of who wins, because some of these games do matter. They are between top teams, and they should be figured in. And the NCAA and the tournament committee can claim all they want that they take them in, but they box themselves into a hole by allowing one little slot to change, because they have to make up obviously brackets that would work under both scenarios. Just end them all on Saturday. What's so hard about that?
Well, what's so hard about it is that mean we. CBS wouldn't have a game to televise.
They don't have games on Sunday.
ESPN wouldn't have two games televised, and Fox wouldn't have a game to televise. And that's that. It's all about that. It's everything. Look, everything in our world of sports in the last 30 years has come down to two things, and inextricably combined, of television and money.
What's your other pet peeve, Mitch?
My other one is, stop calling it East, West, Midwest, and South. When you can't have your first round in the West in Des Moines, Iowa. You can't have your first round in the East in San Jose, okay? You can't have your first round in the South in Hartford, Connecticut. Just stop. Come up with some other way of calling it or whatever the hell it is, but it throws me off. As sports writers, we always view this thing differently, at least in the days when we were sent out to cover all of these things. We would be rooting for the region that our team could get in, preferably with the best weather. If you live in the Midwest and you're coming through a terrible winter time, you were always praying that your college team got sent to the West.
Sure.
Because, you'd be playing in L.A. or you'd play in San Jose or you'd play in Las Vegas maybe not Vegas, but someplace warm. Now you don't even get that. So while this is hardly an important point, that's my second pet peeve.
I got the four names for you: Nesmith, Wooden, Rupp,
there you go.
And I'll give you a fourth
Smith.
One. I had a fourth one.
Smith.
there's an obvious
Dean
fourth
Smith.
One. I'm forgetting. Yes, Smith. Dean. Yeah, I had that. There you go.
Louis Carnesecca, Mitch. Louis Carnesecca. I love him to death. He always used to talk it this year when he's waiting to find out where St. John's would go. He says, it's just a question of whether it's a big suitcase or a small suitcase. And I always love that description. And I can remember when Magic and Larry were on their way to Salt Lake City in 1979. One was playing in Indianapolis. Larry was playing in Cincinnati. And we're going back and forth. I saw they were staggered so you could see a game every day. But you're absolutely right. And guess what else? And I Listen, you know, Bob knows this especially. For 15 years, the Lupica boys and I would go to the Final Four. It was our favorite dad-kid outing of the year, okay? And so I do love this tournament. But when these early round games are going on, Mitch and Bob, the dirty little secret of these things and why they do have these pods now is because they don't sell a hell of a lot of tickets. You're going to see as many empty seats at some of these games as you do at Yankee Stadium in those expensive seats down by the field.
Yeah. You're right, and it's a shame because by sending some of these teams out so far away from where they are located, the average student can't afford to go, obviously. And if you don't have a rich alumni base, they're not going. And I have attended so many games over my time because, we always had Michigan and Michigan State. This is a big thing where I live, and I've covered, first-round regionals and second-round regionals for as long as I've been in sports writing. And you sit there and the place, especially if you're like the first game, the place is half empty. And then the second half, people start wandering in for the other game. So they're not really that interested in the game that's going on the floor. And they're milling about in the seats and in the stands. Yep. and meeting each other and hugging each other. And you're looking around going, there's a basketball game going on here. And you start seeing different colors coming into the arena. It's really, you almost have to overcome the environment in the first round. And then, ironically, you go to a championship if you make it to the Final Four, and then it becomes a different problem. Now you're playing in a football stadium. And we've all talked about that, and we'll talk about it again in 3 weeks. But now you're playing in these football stadiums where there's 70,000 seats, and the lights are weird, and the sound is weird, and all of it has nothing to do with how you normally play college basketball. And Bob, you probably remember, because your mind works like this, the last year that an NCAA championship was in an arena that held about 20,000 people.
Exactly.
It was the Meadowlands.
It was the Meadowlands in 96.
That was it.
That was the last time that we went to an arena or a gym or as opposed to a dome or a football stadium. No, the last time, 96, when Kentucky won. So,
which is always, for all of us, I think, one of the beauties of college basketball is that hot gym feel, the noise, you're just drowning in suffocating noise. And now you go to these stadiums, everything's an echo.
It's an office pool event, okay? It's an office pool event, and it's a made-for-television event. And that's the fact of what we will see over the next 3 weeks. And you guys have heard me talk about this for years, okay? If Zion Williamson and Duke don't win the national championship, a week later, I will defy most casual viewers of this tournament to tell me the five guys who started on the national championship team.
Did you know there is a quick way you could save money? Switch to Geico. All it takes is 15 minutes to find out if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. And Geico offers coverage for more than just car insurance. Got a motorcycle? Geico's got you covered. Got an RV? Covered. Got a boat? Covered. Now, how about homeowners or renters insurance? You bet Geico's got you covered. Go to Geico.com today and see how much you could save. That's Geico.com. Couple of random observations I have here. One is that one of the charms of the early rounds of the tournament is discovering or seeing players that you didn't know even existed or that you only vaguely heard about, and they're not from the mainstream schools, and they can really play and they juice up the tournament. And one of them didn't even get here this year. And am I the only one of the three who took very serious note? And it was heartbroken when South Dakota State lost in their tournament, because that means that one of the I think is the fifth leading all-time scorer in the history of college basketball, Mike Dom, the Dominator, will not be on display for us this year. That's too bad. I wanted to see Mike Dom play one more
time.
Those
are the kind of kids who do make you watch the first round. Let's go back to Duke for a second, because we really haven't talked about Duke. And please remember all the people in the sport who were saying, And we kind of debunked this, said, oh, Zion should shut it down. Get ready for the NBA. That's it. He's done. How much money might this cost him? And guess what? Guess what? He wanted to play. And we're all luckier that he wanted to play.
He's on record, Mike, I talked this morning, as saying that even if he had a chance to go directly to the NBA out of high school, he would have liked to have chosen to go to college for to go
no, this
to have this Duke
great,
experience. I want to believe that. I want to believe
too.
It.
I do too. But look at the he has been even more compelling than before since after the sneaker came apart.
Oh yeah, just because he went 13 for 13 in his
that was
return.
A good game. That's good. You're putting a lot of stock.
Yeah. You're putting a lot of stock in that. You're going to hang your hat on that, Mike. He goes 13 for 13.
I think it's good. I think if you don't miss a shot, it's sort of like bowling a perfect game in bowling.
Only
you know,
seven or eight were dunks.
Well, they've got just such a loaded lineup that I've read that they are one of the most prohibitive favorites if you go by betting and all the rest of that in a long time in the tournament, and it's true. I mean, if not for Zion Williamson, you would be talking about Cam Reddish, R.J. Barrett in superlative tones, Trey Jones as well. Yeah. The fact that they're all on the same team almost makes it, for Krzyzewski, anything short of a championship is a loss. I mean,
except there's one. Thank God, there's a flaw and a potential fatal flaw, and that is that they aren't a great outside shooting team. And as Jay Billis has been saying all year, they are one bad 3-point shooting night away from losing early, and that's good. That gives them.
And Carolina shoots it better than they do.
God,
Bob. Carolina is very dangerous and very talented, and they would probably be the most talented team in the country if it weren't for Zion and Barrett and them. Okay, but they shoot the ball better.
So you're right.
When you get into this tournament.
That gives us some vulnerability and create some doubt that they're not, in my mind, they shouldn't be prohibitive favorite for that lone reason. But now, the other thing is this. How do we rate them ultimately? If everyone were to play their A game, then I would bet on them. Because they got him. Because the A game means that he will be giving you 30 and 15 or something and doing some ridiculous things. And at both ends of the floor, he had the block of the year. We know that. That thing's going to be played into the 29th century. That block in the corner in that game. So we know that. But, oh, no. They shouldn't be prohibitive. But nor
does history suggest it. With Krzyzewski, it is, if you look at recent history, and recent I mean from 2010 forward, he either wins the whole thing or doesn't get to the Final Four.
Lehigh.
This is it for the last 10 years, all right? Going backwards, last year, Elite Eight, last year before that, Round of 32, year before that, Sweet 16, year before that, wins it all. Year before that, first round. Year before that, Elite Eight. Year before that, first round. Year before that, Sweet 16. Year before that, wins it all. It's like if they show up to play in the Final Four, you might as well hand them the crown. But otherwise, it's not a given. So I think this is one of those years. I mean, he's got to get there and he's got to win it. Yes, they have a flaw, but I'm sorry, nobody's going to take that into account with that kind of talent on that team.
Well, they should.
They are not supposed to.
That's why we're here, then, Mitch, to set the record straight.
Here. But they are not supposed to lose. I'm telling you, it'll be.
This is really interesting. Okay, this is really interesting because of the ACC love from the tournament. But I actually think it's justified. Okay, just starting in 2005. Here's the men's college basketball champions. Ready? Carolina, Florida, Kansas, Carolina, Duke, Connecticut, Kentucky, Louisville, Connecticut, Duke, Villanova, Carolina, Villanova. So they've won the ACC. Duke and Carolina have won 5 out of the last 15. But yeah, you hear me talk about this all the time, that we talk about Cinderella at this time of the year, but it's usually great big programs that win. The Cinderella doesn't win. Cinderella doesn't win this thing.
Oh, no. Cinderella doesn't win. Cinderella can get to the Final Four. That's been proven conclusively since 2006 when George Mason set a tone that would include Wichita State and VCU and et cetera. So you can get Loyola as recently as last year, you can get to the Final Four. By the way, who's going to be the sister gene of 2019 is the jackpot question of the day. But anyway, yes, it can do that. So that's the goal. Final Four is a distinction in and of itself. It's the Oscar nomination on your resume. That will suffice for all the mid-majors. The idea that we were one of the ones who got to the Final Four, if one of them ever wins, well, then, we'll have a bigger parade.
And Mitch, guess what? Bob may be right. Maybe we should not go to sleep on the team that has won 2 of the last 3 college basketball national championships,
regional,
meaning Villanova.
I got them getting to the regional. And then I have them playing the Vols and losing. But I'm kind of Vols-centric here. I like the Vols.
Duke will not play one of their fellow ACC challengers, North Carolina or Virginia, until the final.
What do you think of Virginia, Mitch? What do you think of Virginia?
I'm sorry. Last year is always gonna shadow them. And you're going to have to prove to me that there's not a hangover from that. I'm not all in on them. I've watched North Carolina battle Duke without Williamson and with Williamson. You know, it was a little bit like the Michigan State thing. You get to see them closely play each other in a short period of time. And, you know, there was a reason that Duke won the game when they had Williamson and lost them when they didn't. He makes that much of a difference. But I like North Carolina. And I can see them coming out of their region. I think Virginia will stumble. I actually picked Tennessee to come out of that region. Virginia, as well.
All right, give me a sleeper, guy. It's funny. Two of my sleepers are kind of in the same section of the draw, and that is Nevada and Texas Tech, Bobby. Who are your sleepers?
Yeah, well, I got Nevada going to the regional final and losing to the Zags. I got Nevada, Virginia's are going to get by the Wolverines en route to do so, and Texas Tech as well, because they're in that. I have them beating both of them, but ironically. I'll tell you a team that's a dangerous team, I think, and that is Florida State.
That's you just took mine, so
yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I didn't speak up quickly enough.
No, go ahead, Mitch. They got a great coach.
They got a great coach, and the way that their seeding lays out, they'd face Gonzaga. And then Michigan, if the numbers hold, then I mean, I think that's doable. I do think that the West is the easiest bracket to get out of, because I don't have great respect. I have respect. I just don't have number one level respect for Gonzaga. And I think Florida State could pull an upset. I liked what I saw in their championship game and their tournament, even though they didn't win it. And that would be my sleeper.
I got a couple. I want to bring up a little aspect. I call it the hearts and flowers brackets of teams. They're not going to go far. One of them won't even win. But they're going to be playing for the coach. They're going to be playing their butts off for the coach. The first one is Fairleigh Dickinson, and now they're because their coach last year almost died at the tournament. Greg Herenda, he suffered a blood clot, and he had a very, very intensive battle just to live. And here he is back coaching. He's very, rather grateful. They're going to be very emotional, but no question. But they got no chance. But here's a team that's got a chance to win a couple of games and send their coach out on a high, a very well liked person. Fran Dunphy is retiring at Temple. This is Mr. Big Five. Fran Dunphy played for LaSalle, coached Penn for years, and has coached Temple for years. So he's coached at 3/5 in the Big Five. He is well, well liked and respected. They play a play-in game against Belmont. I know that's a treacherous game, but I just think they're going to win. I think they're going to win a couple for the coach, and that would be kind of cool.
Hey, before we go on, guys, let me say this about Hair Club, our sponsor. You know, your confidence is important, and sometimes one change can make all the difference. Hair Club knows this, and they're inviting you to become part of their Hair Club family to see how getting the most out of your hair can change your life. Hair Club is a leader in total hair solutions with a legacy of success for over 40 years. Whether you're looking to revitalize the growth of your own hair or learn more about the latest proven methods for hair replacement or restoration, Hair Club's professionally trained stylists, hair health experts, and consultants will craft a personalized solution to ensure you feel your best and get the most out of your hair. You can see for yourself just how powerful great hair can be. Hey, we get it. Your hair is visibly thinning. And if you see it, you know others see it too. So get your confidence back. And the first step is to check out Hair Club. Here's how you can do that. Go to hairclub.com/hoops today for a free hair health and scalp analysis for new customers. And you can enjoy a $250 savings on any qualifying Hair Club service after that initial consultation. That's hairclub.com/hoops. For a free hair health and scalp analysis and enjoy a $250 savings on any qualifying Hair Club service after that initial consultation. Hairclub.com/hoops. Experience your hair and your life at its best. Only with Hair Club. We're sure you're going to love the club.
Let's move on to a guy that we hardly ever talk about. Mitch, you know this. Mitch is always saying, I think we should talk about LeBron. And we say, oh my God, Mitch, nobody cares about LeBron. but has anybody over the last several months in American sports who didn't, let's say, lose a job or get busted for something, have a worse year than LeBron James has had in his first year with the Lakers, all the way up to and including getting blocked. Bob, yeah. Talk about this block yesterday at Madison Square Garden.
Yes, by Huzunga.
Huzunga.
Not only that, but for people who don't know, he had a record-setting personal PR in reverse yesterday. He missed 11 shots in the fourth quarter. He was 4-for-15 himself. He took the ball four times in a row to try to get the job done and didn't get the job done. And although he flirted with a triple double again, you know. But this is the scope of everything with LeBron. But
it's fact amazing.
Is, it's but amazing. Fact is that they blew an 11-point lead late, 3:14 to go, was it, I think? And, you know, just another down. Is this the nadir? I don't know. Losing to the Suns was a nadir. I don't know if this is a nadir. Losing to the team with the worst record in the league, at least, but it was on the road. But,
well, LeBron James likes, like most players, to put on a show when he comes into New York. Most NBA players try to do that. The Garden holds more esteem for them than it actually does in the real world. So this was, I think, a stinging loss for him in New York City. I think being blocked by a guy who hadn't even been active for the Knicks in over a month, and then got a few minutes, and it was a bad shot.
Well, he had fresh legs, Mitch.
He had fresh legs, and LeBron was on his way down from his jump when he tried to shoot the ball, in fairness, not giving too much credit to Mario Huzunga. But then he took some heat from what I've read. Mike, perhaps you heard this on the MSG network, but yeah, Walt
Clyde,
Frazier
yeah,
was
Clyde,
doing
Clyde
ripped
him
into
up,
him
yep.
for sitting away from his teammates, several seats away from his closest teammate. And he said, when you're the face of the NBA, I'm quoting, when you're the face of the NBA, I think you should be more a part of your team. No matter what is going on in the public, you got to be part of your team. In the locker room, you're not, but you have to exude that type of togetherness in public. And right now, we see that he doesn't really care. It's that kind of stuff that shadows LeBron James, because let's face it, he is the greatest single talent going in the game. And with that, because of his personality, from the I'm taking my talents to South Beach days, all the rest of that, there's a shadow chorus that kind of revels in the failures of LeBron James when he doesn't do well. You could argue there are as many people rooting against him when his teams play in championships because of him as there are rooting for him. He's one of those guys, and guys who have that kind of talent frequently engender that kind of thing. But right now, that chorus is getting its opportunity.
Oh boy!
Because he's got to go down as the worst year of his NBA career. Wouldn't you think?
Oh, it's not even close. But with the expectations and the damage that has been done, just over the forget this since the start of the season, since he got hurt and since he came back, the damage that has been done to the invincibility brand of LeBron James has been immense. I'm going to ask you guys a question because I was thinking about this yesterday. Are you convinced he's going to end his career with the Los Angeles Lakers?
I'm not convinced of anything with him. I think he's too mercurial. I think an opportunity could come where he saw something that would change his legacy, or you know, and then suddenly ends up for 1 year in Boston. I could see anything happening to him. I'll add on a question and throw it over to Bob. You know, he could at his stage dictate his entire career year by year. If he wanted to say to the Cleveland Cavaliers, I'll stay one more season, they would have taken him. He could say, I'll stay month to month, they would have taken him. He could have literally dictated his whole career. Would he have been better off playing one more year with that group and trying to perfect it than giving away the 34th year of his life? Sitting on this bench here, he could have made this happen this year, and different. I mean, everyone just assumes, like, you remember, like, oh, well, it had to happen. It didn't have to happen. He could have spent another year in Cleveland. Yeah. He could have kept those guys together. So, Bob, I toss that over to you.
Unless he That's a good question. Unless he surveyed the situation and saw what was coming up from the rear, and knowing that they had a hard time just to beat Boston and Philly was coming and Toronto, they've licked Toronto, but they would maybe, I forget the sequence of events about Butler, but Leonard, excuse me, I forget the time frame there. If I knew the answer to that if he knew that Leonard was now in Toronto.
I can't remember which case.
Yeah,
first.
That would be interesting. If that's the case, if that were to be, maybe he would have surveyed the landscape. So I got to get out of the East now, because no one was expecting him to win the championship in LA this year. They expected improvement. They just meant making the playoffs and having maybe winning a round, which, well, of course, that would have been tough because they would have been 7 or 8. But anyway, just going to LA. Question.
Bob, nobody thought, and Mitch, nobody thought at this point in the season he would end up being closer to last place than to first place.
No, that's true. That's a good one, yeah. No question. No, of course. No, not even I, who was.
And remember, they were relatively close to. Remember, there was a time. Let's go in the Wayback Machine. They were relatively close to the Warriors in the standings.
Mike, we'll check the time. You brought it up a couple of episodes ago about, we can't get away from the fact that that he missed 17 games and they were 6-11. And at that point, it really, when they were still in the thick of the battle for the 7th and 8th, that was, you could argue very rightfully that was the difference. But no longer, now that they're hopelessly out of it. They did miss. That's going to be part of the story. They missed 17 games and they were 6-11.
Well, but now there's more to this story than just that. What do they do next? Not just with a free agent, but with all the guys that are on that roster. Lonzo Ball becomes a question mark. Are you keeping him or not? Did you learn anything about him or not? I've read so much stuff on him that, they actually played better when he was there, and he was a good compliment to LeBron James, all the way to, you got to get this guy off the team. He can't shoot, and his father's a detriment and all the rest. What about Brandon Ingram? What about Kuzma? When he first went there, when they were 20-15 heading into Christmas, there was a lot of talk about, hey, it's a young players league. You got the best player in the league on there with a bunch of pretty good young talent. By the time he's done mixing around, if he follows the LeBron James formula, that formula that worked in Cleveland the first time he was there, Cleveland the second time he was there, Miami the first time he was there, he molds the team around him. And yeah, they don't end up winning the first year, but by the second year, he's got them all humming. This is the first time that his blueprint just didn't work. And I think if you were to ask him in his heart of hearts to say what's really bugging him, it's not that he got his shot blocked, although I don't think he likes that, on the court to end a game at Madison Square Garden. It's that his mojo, his magic, his magic blueprint, I show up, guys get better, we tweak, we add, we put in, and we win, has fallen apart. They're further behind now than they were when he joined the franchise.
You just defined in so many ways why he's so different than any other big name star in the game, including Steph Curry, including Durant, including Antetokounmpo, including Leonard, or anyone else you want there. He's beyond. It's over and above just being a great basketball player. He is truly a brand. He is truly a phenomenon. He is truly much more than just a great player. And that's the way he set himself up. He has set himself up as this kind of person consciously and successfully, and now has to suffer deal with the consequences if it all doesn't work out to his satisfaction.
I'm going to give you a great stat, okay? Because I just looked this up. On December 29th, the Lakers were 18-11. After 29 games, excuse me, they're 18-11. The Warriors are 19-10. Since they were 18-11, the Los Angeles Lakers have had a record of 13-28. The bottom fell out there. And, I sound like I'm a stuck disc on this. I don't say broken record anymore. A stuck disc, okay? Do you believe that they have a management structure in place, even with LeBron James in the house, to fix this in L.A.? Because I am not convinced that Jeannie Buss, Magic Johnson, and Rob Pelinka can fix this.
No, there's no track record to suggest that they can. There's no doubt. This was an interesting decision made on the part of the Jeannie, and to have an agent an icon of yours who had never been an administrator in basketball, and it's an administrative failure.
I'll put this out there that and this is almost weird to say, but I think the future of LeBron James's legacy in the NBA going forward, not what he's done before, but going forward, will be determined by other players. Yeah. And those other players will include these names: Kevin Durant, Kawhi Leonard, Kyrie Irving, Klay Thompson, Kemba Walker, Tobias Harris, Middleton, some of the guys who are out there as free agents who could join him in Los Angeles. And this is, Mike, you say you're a stuck disc on that point about management. I'll do the same about other players in the NBA. I don't know that it's a slam dunk in their minds that they think if I join LeBron in LA, we're going to win it all. Not given some of the other places that they could go or stay, meaning Oklahoma City, meaning...
Anthony Davis, they're not going to win it all. That's the guy. That's the game changer. Right. I'm not convinced now that he can end up there.
Well, first of all, let's not forget, the reason I didn't list him, he's not a free agent.
I know. I understand.
So
but he's going to be in play.
He doesn't control that. He's going to be in play, but they can wait. They don't have to do it this summer. You know, they still have...
But they can't go into another year with him, Mitch.
I wouldn't think. But what if they don't get... What if what they're getting offered is a joke? You know, I don't know. All I'm saying is it's not mandatory. He doesn't control his own fate. Those other guys do. Kevin Durant can make his own decision. Kawhi Leonard, Irving, Klay Thompson. These guys, Jimmy Butler as a player option. They can all make their own decision on their future. Davis has to just be enough of a pain in the butt to go. But he can't decide where he's going. These guys can. And if they collectively decide, you know what? The king ain't what he used to be. And going and playing with him when he's turning 35 and signing a 3-year deal to do that, well, I'm going to be playing with them when they're 35, 36, 37. Is that going to get me what I want? I know it's sacrilegious almost to say this, that any player wouldn't want to play alongside LeBron James for several years, but I'm not sure that they're all looking at it the way that they used to.
No,
for
plus, the first year.
What Durant always said, you know, it ain't easy being his teammate. And, you know, other players have said the same, including Irving.
For the first time this year, that question was raised. It was an unthinkable thought that you would say you don't want to play with him because of the nature of his game and the passing nature of his game, and the idea that I think he has been team oriented to a fault at times in his career, you'd ever wind up saying what you. But that is a thought that's out there now. There's no doubt about it. Allied to this, before we get off of NBA, as long as we're talking about the NBA and talking about free agency and talking about teams trying to figure out where they're going to go from here, Michael, on a scale of 1 to 10, what would you put as the chances of either Durant or Irving or both ever becoming a New York Knick?
I think that people that I've spoken to and people whose opinions I respect about the NBA do believe that Kleiman the agent and Durant do have a fascination with New York City and what they think it would do to Kevin Durant's own brand. So I don't think I can rule out that Durant actually might shock the world and do this, and then you might see his agent become the latest agent to get a front office position in the NBA. Mm-hmm. No one compliments you when their paycheck is correct. Nobody does. But make one mistake and you risk alienating your entire workforce. With Kronos, we make sure your payroll is done right the first time, from punch to paycheck. Embedded checklists, simplified workflows, a single source of truth. HR, payroll, talent, and timekeeping in one unified system. All with a proven implementation approach and simplified, transparent pricing. Learn more at Kronos.com/payroll. Kronos, workforce innovation that works.
Well, in a world where Odell Beckham is now playing in Cleveland, everything is possible.
Yeah.
All right. So we really can't say. I want to jump over before we finish up here to the world of golf.
Yeah.
I always find this an interesting study. So I click on ESPN onto their golf page.
Sure.
Top story on their golf page, Progress, perspective, and Tiger's slow build towards the Masters.
Oh, God. Oh,
next
no.
story. Rory McIlroy wins the Players.
I know.
It is literally ranked that way. And once again, Tiger Woods comes out of the Players' Championship nowhere close to the front. And the whole story is, I'm right where I need to be for the Masters.
He was
and
underwater like Jacques Cousteau on Friday on the 17th hole. I know that for a second. And Mitch, you're 100% right. I have the same fascination with the golf page, the golf homepage at ESPN. Because if even I sometimes think that even if Tiger is practicing, they'll find a way to inject him into the tournament story. And the sad thing is, we saw a surpassing performance by a guy I think is the most talented player in the world, and that is Rory McIlroy. As the golf year really, Mitch and Bob, the golf year really began yesterday now that they moved the Players back to March. Yeah. Now we've got the Masters in April and the PGA and da-da-da. And it began with Rory McIlroy on the back nine at Sawgrass, showing to me anyway, as somebody who loves the sport and follows it probably more closely than any one of you guys do, that his best is still better than anybody else's best. And guys, he walked off the 16th green after hitting an amazing second shot on a par five out of a fairway bunker. And he's telling himself, I have to make three more good swings, meaning one on the island green and then two on 18 to do this. And that is exactly what he did, including striping a driver on 18. Over the water to the middle of the fairway, when a lot of guys thought the more prudent play would be to hit a three wood.
347 yards, if I'm not mistaken. I haven't been paying close attention about what's going on in golf and whose season begins in the second week in April, and there are so many of them out there. Let it be known that Rory McIlroy has knocked on the door almost every time out this year prior to this week, has played wonderfully on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and has not played so wonderfully on Sunday. And this has been this is a storyline, probably the
one top six finish after another, Bob.
Been the number one storyline of the early season in golf for those of you who haven't been paying attention. And for him to do what he did yesterday at this point foreshadows maybe a monster year. I mean, he's already having an excellent year. By the way, let's salute him. He gets the biggest paycheck in history for this, over $2
million. Mitch, let me go back to what Mitch said, okay? Mitch, to further validate what you just said, I've got the homepage up now at ESPN. The pictures of Tiger Woods, that's enough headline, okay? Here are the top headlines in golf yesterday. Simpson flagged after accidental ball movement. McIlroy holds off Furyk, 48-year-old Jim Furyk to snag. And then the three out of the next five headlines, Mitch, are about Tiger Woods. He feels right on track, overcomes slow start, posts even par 72 the other day, and missed avoiding second water shot on 17, which, Mitch, probably would have been the end of everything if he'd gotten wet.
Yeah. You mentioned the money that Rory McIlroy made, and the thing that makes Tiger Woods this continual devotion of unwarranted stories and headlines is that, unlike every other player in golf, his success determines so much of the media who covers him success, from the TV networks to ESPN and the rest, that they're almost invested in having to pump him up even when his golf doesn't deserve it. Now, we and other people can sit here and look at it. He doesn't deserve to be a headline. He's not playing well enough to be a headline. He's an aging golfer in a sport where the younger guys get it done. And yes, if he comes back and does something amazing, terrific. But long past are we to be reporting on improvement or getting better, whatever. That's been the Tiger Woods story for years already. And yet, because so many watches and golf clubs and balls and everything are sold, and sneakers and Nike gear when he does well, there are these people who are just literally tied into his success is their success, and from the networks to the people who cover him to websites. And so he gets this crazy crazy disproportionate amount of attention. It's almost like wishing could make it so. Meanwhile, McIlroy is much more of a story. And not only because he's been playing well, but because the flip side of his playing well is that he wasn't finishing. And, you know, sometimes that can come back and haunt you. He was coming close, playing well, but not winning. Here on this course that is a good harbinger for the Masters, and he said so himself in terms of the style of way it plays, he comes back and wins, holds off a good field, and now is a few weeks away from playing in Augusta. And he ought to be, if you're going to do five stories, and they ought to be five stories on him, not one, oh yeah, well, McIlroy won. Now, here's five stories on Tiger. And it's maddening as a member of the media to watch this, especially because you know it has so much more to do with business and ratings than it has to do with news.
And Bob, am I missing anything, Mike? What? Here's the thing about McIlroy, and Brandon Chamblee pointed this out on Golf Channel. After his round on Saturday, he went out to he was the last guy on the range that night. No swing coach. No, he's out there finding his own game. It was such a cool thing to witness.
That's kind of my question would be, Mike, since you are the golf guru here. Am I missing anything? He seems awful easy to like.
Oh, there's nothing not to like about this kid. You know, he putted badly for a couple of years. He's still got the Masters. You know, Mitch and Bobby's got the Masters thing. He's still looking. Complete the career Grand Slam. Yep. He's at the age of like 30. Okay. 30, yeah. He's the best. He's the greatest driver of the ball I've ever seen. And he's fun to watch. He's respectful of the game. Arnold loved him. Jack loves him. He's the real deal. I was so happy that he finished the way he did yesterday, because you're right. The narrative had been that he couldn't finish. And now he's got to go to the Island Green, and then he's got to play with an Atlantic Ocean, it looks like, of water down the left on 18. And he went for the pin. He went for the fairway. He put the ball on the green. He easily could have birdied both of the last two holes. No. Bob and Mitch, there's nothing not to like about this kid.
All right, let's wrap things up with our parting shots. And Bob Ryan, why don't you lead us off?
Now, parting shots.
You know, baseball has historically been intolerant of gambling. It was an issue in the 19th century. It was almost wrecked by the 1919 Black Sox scandal. For decades, the first thing you saw as you entered any clubhouse in organized baseball was an admonition about gambling in two languages. Bud Selig, as commissioner, once denounced gambling as quote-unquote evil and said it would destroy the sport, another quote-unquote, destroy the sport. So now that baseball has embraced MGM as a gambling partner and is wholeheartedly into the gambling thing, how can it handle the Pete Rose situation? You know, that's why he's not in the Hall of Fame ballot, in case you didn't know. It's because he bet on his team while managing the Reds. Right now, you'd have to say, so what?
I understand that a ton of work, goes into the selection of the 64 teams and the add-ons for the NCAA tournament, which once again will be treated as being more important than climate change over the next 3 weeks. And because there's always such interest in the tournament because of office pools and all the screaming about bubble teams and the big band dance and who ought to be number one or number two or number three, we too often give these people who get to play God, as at least basketball gods at this time of the year, far too much credit, especially when they act like weasels. It's what they did yesterday when they got an attack of the cutes and decided to have Richard Pitino's Minnesota team play Louisville, his dad's old team, in the first round. You know who doesn't deserve that? Richard Pitino, a gifted young coach who saw his team grind its way into the tournament. You know who shouldn't have to answer questions about his dad this week? He shouldn't. I don't care what happens in this game. Richard Pitino didn't have a team that got left out of the tournament. He got screwed anyway. Not for the good of the sport, for sport.
It was two words. It came in a fax. It read simply, I'm back. On this day, 24 years ago, Michael Jordan returned to basketball after an 18-month absence to try his hand at professional baseball. It would be the start of his second act, and an amazing second act it was. Jumping in with just 2 months left in the season, he still averaged 27 points in the regular season games that year and 31 points in the playoffs. And while the Bulls didn't win at all in that shortened Jordan season, they sure wanted his next 3 years. But looking back on that day, I realized Jordan was the harbinger of something else. His two-word facts was the modern foretelling of the tweet.
Yeah.
That's right. Back then, faxing in your own news story was news in itself. But today, athletes regularly save all their biggest headlines for their own social media, Facebook, Twitter. Heck, I just read where Halati Nagata, the longtime NFL lineman, announced his retirement through an Instagram image on the top of Mount Kilimanjaro. So there's one more thing that we can say Jordan did as well as and before his modern counterparts. The idea of breaking news to a reporter is dated these days, still done on occasion, but feels like a throwback. Two words, I'm back. You want to talk about the efficiency of Jordan's game? If he were tweeting, he'd still have 138 words to spare. That's going to wrap things up for today's Sports Reporters Podcast. Please note that you can get this on Stitcher. And tell your friends it's easy to get on that network there and that platform. We do this every Monday and Thursday, so we'll be back in a few days. Until we see you then, on behalf of Mike Lupica and Bob Ryan, this is Mitch Albom saying, have a great week.